Welcome to the Crazy Cool Family Podcast with Don and Suzanne Manning.
A podcast where we share with you great insights about everything family from over 30 years of parenting 7 kids and over a decade of equipping parents through our Crazy Cool Family Ministry.
So let us inspire and equip you to build your best family.
Hey, Crazy Cool Parents. Do you struggle with discipline in your home? Are you spending endless amounts of time correcting, nagging, and fighting with your kids to just obey? If you said yes, yes, yes in your mind, or maybe even out loud, then we have an amazing invitation for you. Dawn and Suze are launching the first ever Crazy Cool Family cohort. It's a 3-week virtual cohort for parents wanting to learn to correct effectively. It starts in early April, and we'd love for you and all your friends to join. If you need a breakthrough in your discipline, then this is your next step. All the information can be found by clicking the link in the show notes. Don't wait to sign up. April will be here before you know it. Come invest in your family with us in the first ever Crazy Cool Family cohort.
Here we are, Suzanne, with another round of the Crazy Cool Family podcast. Welcome.
We're in such a fun season talking about relationships. It is just, it's my wheelhouse. It's my thing. I love relationships.
You do, and you're very good at them as well. So we have a lot to share with you today. So we've been talking about so many topics with relationships, and today we're going to talk about learning to wait.
And we're going to kind of break it down a little bit into little, middles, and bigs, because waiting looks radically different to the 2-year-old that's throwing a fit because they want a cookie before lunch versus the high schooler who wants to drive, but he's not hadn't, you know, gone through all the training for it yet.
So we're just going to have a moment of silence
for all of you.
And so we're just going to wait. Just going to
so
make you
wait. So you can practice waiting.
No, not really. We're not really going to do that. The waiting is a biblical concept. There's so many examples of waiting, you know, the scripture says in Psalm 27:14, wait for the Lord, be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord.
I think just even to break that down a little bit, to be strong and to take heart, we have to wait for the Lord to even show up, to give us the strength. Good one to start off
Ecclesiastes with. Ecclesiastes 3, there's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. You know, I'm clicking through my Bible here. Isaiah 40, 31 says, let me get to it. Oh, I've got to scroll a long way for that one. It says that, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Isn't it so many times we want the Lord to do, and we were talking a little bit about this before the podcast, that this is one of my nemesis.
I said, Don, you're not very good at this. And he goes, wait, what? Yeah. I said, well, no, it's not a bad thing, but thanks for being vulnerable with the people.
My wife is so critical of me. You're not very good at this.
It just took him a moment to go, wait a minute.
I'm going to bow up to that a little bit. But, you know, I want things to get done. I want to be productive. I want to see things happen. And so the idea of just being patient and waiting for the Lord, or so many times as an adult, I've had to wait on things, sometimes months and years.
Way longer than you ever wanted to.
Yes. And so, but looking at the scripture, even the people of scripture, so often, you know, Moses spent 40 years in the desert before he came to rescue the people of Egypt.
He spent another 40 years in the wilderness with the people.
That's true. Although that was a different reason for waiting, but yes. And then, you know, Jesus didn't start his ministry till he was 30. He prepared for 30 years for 3 years. And so often God has things happen not in our timing, but in the Lord's timing. And so how do we teach our kids the concept of delayed gratification? It is good to learn that concept. And it, you know, we know it makes me think about one of our grandkids. They said, hey, they wanted to be married. And they said, you know, well, why do you want to be married? And they said, well, because the married people get to stay up late. They don't have to go to bed. And so their concept was, if they got married, then they didn't want to wait to get married. They wanted to go ahead and get married now so they didn't have to go to bed, because the married people got to stay up and do all the fun things. And so, but, you know, there's usually, why do we want things to happen quicker? Maybe it's because we're in pain with them, or maybe because we want the benefit of them or whatever, but how do
that's a good distinction.
Really, delayed gratification is a surrender. Mm-hmm. It's a concept of surrender. It's a surrender to God's will. And it's a surrender to hearing his voice and acting when he wants us to act. Well, you know, at first, in order to learn to surrender to God, our children have to learn to surrender to us first and to the things that life puts on them.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say, is that we have to, or we get to maybe teach our children to learn how to wait, and to learn how to wait well, because the Lord does. What I've learned along the way about the Lord is that he's not on a timeline. He's not bound to the minutes and the seconds of, and the days and the weeks and the months and the years. He's not bound to that for us. And so for him, for the Lord, I think what I've seen is that he's going to take however long it takes for us to learn the quality, the characteristic, the fruits of the Spirit. He's going to do whatever. Once again, time doesn't matter to him, whatever it takes to get what does matter to him, which is basically to love him, love others, and love ourselves.
And there's also a other side to waiting, where waiting, I'm just going to do it whenever, because, you know, I'm just going to wait on the Lord. You know, that's not what we're talking about either. There is it does need to be in life a sense of urgency.
Well, proactive, I would say, definitely. I mean, along with your urgency, there's a proactivity that goes with that as well. Because I don't think the Lord's just wanting us to sit there and wait for things to unfold, because I think that he's actually, because he's given us free will, he's subject to what we choose and what others choose around us. And so if others are not getting things done, then we've got to push through and get things done. And we can't use the excuse of, oh, I'm just waiting on the Lord. What does the Lord have you to do next then,
Galatians 6:9
Galatians
6:9 says, I think it kind of sums it up for us. It says, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. See that scripture, it's saying, we're always doing good. Let us not become weary in doing that. Sometimes when things don't come to fruition, we become weary in doing the good things, because we're like, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? So, and we get impatient, but God says there's a proper time for things. And it says, therefore, in verse 10, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers. So there is this activity that's happening as we believe in the future. And there in the activity is we are doing the good that God wants us to do as we await on his result that's going to come about. And that's what we're teaching our kids. And many times, I think as we teach, let's start talking about a little bit about going through littles, middles, and bigs. And I think so many times we give them the consequence, hey, you need to wait, you need to wait, you need to wait. But we don't give them, it says that, you know, in that scripture, it says there's a proper time for things to happen. And so often I think we can help our kids learn how to wait when we give them the proper time. Let me give you an example of that. You know, in a parenting curriculum that we've learned in the past, there was, and it's a great lesson to learn. It was called the interrupt rule. And so what happens is, you know, a kid comes up to you and they start, you know, pulling on your dress or your pants and saying, dad, 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 or mom, 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 mom. And they won't stop talking and they just keep going. And what they taught us to do was, instead of having them do that all the time, is to give them another alternative in which they just place their hand on your leg and then you put your hand over their hand in order to acknowledge that they've received. But then as long as your hand's on there, they know that you're there, and then they're trained to wait until you then look at them and acknowledge them. And so what you've done there is, instead of just saying, stop yelling at me, stop, you know, asking me all the time, you give them the fact that, hey, the good thing is coming.
Yeah.
But you have to do it. You have to wait in order to see that. But I'm going to give you the outcome. I'm going to give you hope. And so then once they have that hope, many times that child would learn this. Some, not all kids would learn it, but many would. And they would be very, you'd watch them be very patient. They would go up there and just place their hand on their mom's leg or their dad's leg, and everything works out. So I think part of giving the, part of delayed gratification, it's delayed, but it's also gratification.
Yes.
So,
yeah, and so I love that. And just I remember that well, and we actually would see it all over the church, you know, after church was out and all the little kids, and we'd all kind of, you know, chuckle a little bit because we had them all trained so well. But I just want to encourage you parents to know that your littles, your little kids, they don't understand the concept of time at all, and they don't understand the concept of waiting. You realize that they have had their whole life has been, you have taken care of their whole life. You have fed them. They're self-centered. They think the world revolves around them. And so it's our job to train them as each year that they develop that that's actually not the case anymore. You know, as we teach independence and all that stuff. And one of the main things we need to teach them is waiting and time and what time means. And so it's very good to practice that and to teach them that patience, you know, so not to give into their every single whim and stop what you're doing to take care of their needs, but to train them along the way that there's all sorts of needs that need to be taken care of. Little sister's needs or your mother needs. I'm going to go to the bathroom and then I'll come back and fix you a sandwich. And so to be intentional about teaching your children time and waiting is so valuable because, once again, it transitions to their relationship with God and understanding that waiting with God is a good thing because I'm waiting for good things. And mom has taught me that waiting is good.
What's a practical way to, I have some thoughts, but I'm going to ask you first. What is a practical way that you could give an example of teaching a three-year-old to wait?
Well, I mean, I just think that, maybe this isn't as practical as you want, but you just use your words and explain what's happening. Just let them in on what's going on. Let them in on the timeline, if you will. And so I just remember when Molly was little, before she went to bed that night, I would say, okay, tomorrow we're going to do this, 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 and this. And so then that kind of laid her expectations out. And then the next day I was able to, okay, we're going to eat breakfast, and then you're going to go get your shoes on, and then we're going to go to the grocery store, and then we're going to go to the park and play. And so throughout the day, when are we going to the park? Well, what did we say? What have we done? Well, we already eaten breakfast. We've got our shoes on. Great. We're running errands right now. And then we go to the park. And so just to kind of go over and over that again with them, basically to let them in our adult processes, in our thought processes, because they don't have adult thought processes. And so to practically just share time with them and the passing of time and the things that we're doing within that time.
Yeah, I think that so often it becomes a war of wills to see who's going to get what they want. And, you know, and I just picture the three-year-old or the four-year-old or the five-year-old just saying, you know, there's some kids, and I think they're different kids. Some kids kind of shut down and they don't ask, but other kids are like, you know, mom, 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 you know, and they just cannot not interrupt.
Yeah.
Well, but that, and so then it comes back as the mom or dad is frustrated and they come back and say, no, you may not do, you know, and it becomes this, and the child says, well, I'm either going to throw a fit or I'm going to elevate my game because I've found that that's what happens. That's what the adult does.
Yeah.
That's they get mad. And so if I get mad or throw a fit, then I may get my way. And then it becomes this downward spiral.
For sure.
And so one of the things, as you were talking about that, I love the idea of explaining things. And also just when they're doing that is to keep in that, you can be firm without being angry. And you can say, you know, one of the things I would tell our kids a lot is, as long as you ask like that, I cannot meet your request.
Yeah.
There's no way for me. When you are continually bugging me about it, that turns my yes into a no.
Mm-hmm.
And now when you can be, now let me ask you, I need you to go be patient for 2 minutes.
Right. You know, we've done that before. Set
the timer.
Yep.
Yes. I'm going to set the timer for 2 minutes. I don't want you to ask me for 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some days that's the only quiet you've ever gotten in the day is that 2 minutes, but it's blessed. And I say, I want you to go sit over there and maybe you give them something to do. I want you to sit over there and read your book for 2 minutes. I want you to look at it, get, you know, because I'm going to talk to your sister. And we're going to figure this out. And in 2 minutes, when that timer goes off, you can come back to me. That's now we've taught them patience. I mean, and it's that little win is more and more about how that you can teach patience to a little guy or girl.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I agree. I had a thought and I totally lost it. So I'm hoping it'll come back, but you want to move on to middles?
Yeah, I think so. So as kids, you know, what you're saying, I think is so, I want to go back to the littles and
idea will come.
We're going, I'm just going to finish that. And what you said was brilliant is, I think a lot of parents don't get this, that your littles don't have a sense of time. And so if you understand that, and any time they do have a sense of, is very, very short. So if you deal with, but now we go to middles, and middles is grade school kids, they're starting to have a sense of time. And so what's happening more with middles is they're starting to explore things they're not ready for.
Right.
And so they're starting to want a phone. They're starting to want to see things. And the weight that comes with middles, we'll get to the bigs in a minute, the middle schoolers and high schoolers. But with the middles, they're starting to get exposed to things. And now it becomes a waiting game of, hey, we got to get you emotionally and spiritually ready to handle what you're seeing in life, what's coming at you as you're in school now, as you're, you know, exposed to more things.
Yeah, we say all the time with middles that they've kind of got 1 foot in childhood and one foot in adulthood. And the parent that protects the innocence of that childhood and that middle schooler, what you're doing is you are creating an emotionally secure child. But the parent that lets their middle schooler be exposed to
you mean grade schooler in this point?
Well, yes, the middle-aged child, not a toddler, but not a teen. But if the parent lets that child get more and more exposed to the things of this world that they're not emotionally ready to process, then that becomes this struggle between, we've seen it so many times, between the parent and the child, where the child's just wanting to grow up. They're wanting to do what they want to do. And what we do as parents, in the name of protection, is we pull back and we say, no, you can't have that, or you can't do that, or you can't. And nobody likes to be told they can't. I to this day don't like to be told that I can't. If I'm driving and the police officer pulls me over and tells me I can't do something, it makes me mad, you know, and they're the authority and I have to submit, and your child is, you know, going to have to submit under your authority. But as parent, once again, if I were to advocate for your child, then I would say that we are to come along beside our children and help them grow up. So if they think they're ready to be, to have something or be exposed to something, then what can you do as the parent to partner with them in learning that? Because the bigger picture, parents, is that we want to be the ones that expose our children basically to the evils of this world.
We want to be involved in that process.
We very much want to be the ones that share with them about sex and share with them about alcohol and share with them about drugs and share with them about friendship and loyalty and disloyalties and cheating and lying, all of those things that are happening in their lives. We want to be the people that show our children God's side of it and the world side of it.
Well, and if you go back to the littles, I'm not really going back there, but I'm pretending I'm going back there. It's the same analogy, you know, when that child comes up to you and says, mom, 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 or dad, 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 and you don't, and you handle it with, stop talking, stop doing that or whatever. You're creating a conflict. You as the parent, the child is acting like the child. You as the parent are creating a conflict, and therefore it creates a negative behavior. when that goes into the middles in that grade school area, when they're bringing you things they want to do, and you respond with no, and you don't explain well, and you're not partnering with them, you're creating the same type of conflict that the irritating little three-year-old did. And so therefore, what do? You create avenues or create motivations, if you will, for that child to hide things from you. You create motivations for the child to be exposed to things that you don't know about.
Right.
And so, but if you'll handle it like Suzanne is saying, and it's not that we're not talking about being permissive. That's not the goal. The goal is not to be
being informed and educated
and involved.
Yes, very much. But yeah, I was just reading a book the other day, and the girl, you know, went off on the deep end sexually in high school and college because when she was curious about it, she had a list. This is brilliant on the girl's part. Had a list of questions that she had written about all things male, sexual. I mean, all the things. Just a list of questions that she thought she could show her mom and they could talk about it. And the mom freaked out, literally burned the piece of paper and said, you do not need to talk about, you don't need to think about this. You don't need to know about this. And so then the girl went and found all the information because it's in us to know. I mean, anyway, all that to say is let's not be that kind of parent. Let's be the kind of parent that does when our children start giving us indications that they want to grow up.
And one of the things that
instead of saying, wait, you're not ready for that, wait. I mean, and there are times that you can say, wait. Do you remember the Corrie Ten Boom when she was asked her dad? I mean, do you remember the story?
Well, so Corrie Ten Boom was 1940s or 30s, and her dad would go. She would walk to the train station with her dad. And he was talking about the story was in the context of faith, that God gives you faith when you need it. And he said,
do you remember
when we went to walk you to the train station? And she said, yes, I do, Daddy. And she said, he says, when do I give you your ticket? And he said, and she said, right before we get on the train. He says, because that's when you need it. He says, that's the way God is. He gives you things when you need it. The analogy that Suzanne's going to is, you know, sometimes, you know, and this relates to what I was going to say is we would tell our kids a lot. Hey, do you think I'm for you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that I'm for you? And that is a belief that you want to instill in your child, that as they get older, the enemy wants them to believe that you're not for them. And sometimes your actions indicate to them, whether you believe it or not, whether you may not want your actions to do it, but your actions can definitely indicate to your child that you don't, and that you're not for them, that you're against them. And that's, as it grows in the teenage years, it gets worse. But we would tell our kids a lot. And as we go through this thing, do you believe that I'm for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do. Okay. So now, because I'm for you, and also I've lived this life a little longer and God has put me in charge of you. So when I'm doing that, when I say that we need to wait on this, I want you to try to believe that this is good for you, that I am, that you may not like it. And there's lots of times I have to do things that are good for me that I don't like.
Right.
You know, but I'm going, I need to eat this broccoli. It's not flavorful. I mean, you know, whatever, but I need to eat it because it's good for me. I can't just always eat ice cream. And so you put it in their terms and you say, hey, I'm for you. And then it helps to ease that. It helps us to be involved and to ease that if you can instill that belief in your child.
I love that, because as that transitions into the bigs, you know, what they're not, so the, as that transitions into the bigs, what they're wanting to do is they're wanting to do things physically that they're not ready for. And so to the littles, they don't get time. They don't get the concept of time. They don't get the idea of waiting. Middles, they want to do things they're not emotionally ready for, and the world wants to expose them and rob them of their innocence. Bigs, they now want to do things they're physically not ready for. They want to go get drunk with their friends, or they want to smoke e-cigs, or they want to do things sexually way before they're, I would say, emotionally ready for sure.
Yes, and they become physically ready for things that they're not mentally ready for.
Yes, like their body is turning into an adult body, and they're, and so They want to, what I would say is that with the middles and the bigs, they want to hurry up and grow up. Little kids don't want to, I mean, I love it that you use the analogy of little kids want to stay up late and they want to do the perks of the adults, but they still want to play. They still want to be a child. But middles and bigs, they're seeing adult world. They're seeing the privilege of that. And they're seeing the things that they think that they want to do because adulthood looks good.
Yeah. Well, and it shows where they are emotionally, and that a lot of times they want the benefits of the adult world without the responsibilities of the adult world. I'm lazy, I don't want to do this, but yeah, you know, and not every kid. I mean, we're stereotyping a little bit, but and even then, I think that even with the bigs, that idea of I'm for you is important. You know, I remember one time, one of our children, I will make it gender neutral. They wanted to have a significant other. They wanted to have a significant other, and they were in middle school, and we didn't think it was time for that to happen. And so Ann didn't like the relationship either. And so what I said to that child was, I said, how much do you think I value the relationship with you? Everything I've done for your life, everything I've coached all your sports teams, I've invested in you, I've been a part of your life and everywhere you go. Okay. I am putting my relationship on the line because I think you should wait on this.
Right.
Do you see how I've invested? I mean, do you see what I'm risking here because this is important to me?
Right.
Couching conversations like that with your kids, it's not a guilt thing. It's helping them to see
that you value care.
Yeah, and not just do you see that in these themes we're trying to get you to stay away from? You don't teach waiting by being harsh and shutting them down. Mm-hmm. You teach waiting by involving them in the process.
Yes.
And valuing seeing how much you value them and how you're for them. It's just a common theme. We're just doing it with different examples. It's not a boyfriend or a girlfriend when they're five, although our grandson wanted it to be that way, I guess. but it's more about, you know, it's 2 minutes when they're three, and it's different issues when they're 17.
For sure. Yes, exactly. And the value of teaching them to wait, and that, I mean, and what we've said earlier is that on the other side of waiting is goodness. And when you push through it and you make things happen before they're ready, or you do things before you're ready, then you have the opposite of goodness, calamity, you know, catastrophe, yeah, whatever it is that you can think of that's not the plan.
And I think the way I will end this podcast is with a warning to parents as well. And that is, don't make your kids wait too long.
Yeah.
Because there are the other side of the parents that are so protective and so fearful that you're not getting a phone till you're 30. You know what I mean? It's like, it's, and what that does is when, so it's okay. There's many times we've had our kids wait on things. Another little side note, have another family that's waiting with you, because that's super helpful.
Really,
you know,
helps.
Have a wingman, have somebody else that they are doing it with, a friend that you're also friends of the family. But we have parents a lot that we think are going overboard with the protection of their kids. And when that happens, when it's on the very end of the spectrum, it really does create resentment. Usually that parent is not being too compassionate about it. They're not seeing it from the kid's perspective. They're seeing it more from the perspective of fear.
Yeah.
And so, and when we see the resentment that causes, and eventually that child just gives up, they become deceptive. And basically the parent has kind of created that.
And just to speak into that too, parents, just tap into when you were that age. You know, you probably don't remember it when you were three, but you might remember being five and having to wait until Christmas, you know? So just tap into those feelings and remember that those are real. They're legit feelings. I remember I had to wait till I was 13 to get my ears pierced. And so just the different things that you had to wait for, remember that, and remember that as you're encouraging your children to wait.
I think that's one of those things, like, I'm for you. That is another thing that's just huge. If you can see life through their eyes, mm-hmm. you will be such a better parent in every way, mm-hmm. you know, but we're talking about in terms of waiting right now. So that's awesome.
Okay. And so as we wrap up, I just want to send you back to Ecclesiastes 3. And I just encourage you to remember there's a time for everything, a season for every activity under heaven. I remember using this with my kids so much as a teaching springboard, you know, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, unroot, keel, a time to kill, a time to heal, tear down, weep, laugh. I mean, and it's got the contrasts of each one of them. And I just encourage you to go through and see which one of those, you know, a time to mourn, a time to dance. If you're going through a sad time in your life right now, then pull that out. Pull out verse 4 and show them, oh, you know what? You know, God tells us that there's a time to be sad and it's okay to be sad right now. And there's going to be a time to dance. Mm-hmm. Or when you're dancing, when you're having a dance party in the kitchen, this is a time to dance. We're dancing right now. And to continually pull in what's happening in your life and connect it to time and then show where waiting has benefited you in the whole process. And so I just encourage you to go, maybe even print it out, print out the scriptures, put it on your refrigerator or something like that. And just remember that there's a time for all the good and there's a time for all the bad. And the time is all wrapped up in waiting.
Love all you guys out there. And I want to inspire and encourage you as a parent to, teach your kids to wait, and to do it effectively is a great long-term lesson with your kids. Go be crazy, crazycoolfamily.com.